The other way to go beyond the standard model is to go beyond quantum field theory. Beyond quantum field theory, the preferred theory is so far is string theory and or M theory, and that describes that will be the candidate for a unified theory, and that has both supersymmetry and extra dimensions as ingredients for self-consistency. So for both reasons, this looks like the right avenue, or the most promising avenue to go to, if we want to go beyond the standard model, guided only by theoretical principles. Of course, in a couple of years' time, we'll have experiments working in the CERN, and hopefully we will have, go back to the old-fashioned way of doing science in the sense of being guided not by theoretical ideas but by experiment. But in the meantime, that's all we have, and we have to follow the most promising avenues, and we consider this to be one. Okay, so before I start with the next chapter, any questions about what I had said? No? Good. So, supersymmetry. So this chapter is about the algebraic structure of supersymmetry, so it will take us a while to start with supersymmetry itself. So we'll start with a 2.1, which is a Poincaré symmetry. And spinners. And I intend this section to be just a review section, just to call back to your attention these main concepts. Depending on your feedback, I can go fast or slow with this section. And the reason is that in principle you have seen this material in the symmetries and group course. Who attended that course? Who did not attend the course? Okay, very good. Who understood the course? Other people. Okay. Okay, so I will just go fast. I will repeat some of the material, but faster, just to emphasize the main points without making the main derivations, because that will be a way to save some time to use next. But please stop me if there is anything that you don't understand. Okay, so. Okay, so we start with the Poincaré group. And Poincaré group, we know what it is. So we start with that's a symmetry of special relativity. And we start with a four coordinates in space-time. And we make the transformation x prime mu equals to lambda mu nu x nu. That plus a shift. And this describes the Poincaré transformation, where this is Lorentz and this is translation. And the Lorentz group is the elements of the Lorentz group are such that they live invariant the metric, the so lambda transpose times eta times lambda equals to eta, where eta equals 1 minus 1 minus 1 minus 1. And then zeros, that's the standard metric. And eta is an invariant tensor under the Lorentz transformations, and that's what we use to raise and lower indices. I will, in general, the Lorentz group will have several disconnected pieces. I will use the one that is connected to the identity and what is called the isochronous Lorentz group, but I'll just, it's usually written with this little arrow over there, but for this course I will just consider the SO3-1, and I'll just for notation thing, I will never write this arrow, it's just to say that it's SO3-1. So that means that it has determinant 1, that means that is that what the S is, and O is orthogonal, leading invariant this metric. Okay. And the algebra is such that the generators are matrices M mu nu and P say, sigma. The M mu nu generate the Lorentz group and P generate the translations. And the algebra is such that P mu P nu is zero. And then M mu nu P gamma equals I P eta minus P eta, where this is mu mu gamma mu mu gamma. And then the big one is N mu nu M rho sigma equals to I times N eta plus N eta minus M eta. This is mu sigma mu rho mu rho sigma 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 rho. Okay. So this is the algebra of the Poincaré group. P's are the momenta that they generate translations as usual. N times P, N generate the Lorentz transformations. N commuting with P gives you this. This essentially tells you that P transforms as a vector under Lorentz transformation. So every vector will satisfy this by substituting here itself. And this is the algebra of Lorentz transformations. Okay.
Excuse me?
Yeah? For the n's, no, that depends on the representation. Okay, so you will have the n will be a matrix. You will have a representation as a matrix acting on space time, and then that will I can give you the formula. But but in general, the algebra is much more than the representation. So I'll just write the algebra, and then we will talk about different representations. Okay, that's a good point. Okay. So continuing about the Lorentz group. Actually, I have just to answer your question probably more properly. You want to write the matrices, a representation for this. is m rho sigma component mu nu equals I eta sigma mu delta rho mu minus eta rho mu delta sigma mu. Okay. So that's a particular representation. So you choose, this is the matrices, 4x4 matrices that satisfy this algebra. Okay, so that's a particular case. But in general, we will see other representations of that algebra. So you can have, as a next exercise, just use these matrices and multiply them and see if they satisfy the algebra. Very good. So we will use properties of the Lorentz group, and the properties of the Lorentz group are some properties one is that the group SO31 is locally related to SU2 across SU2. This is important when we talk about representations of the algebra. And the reason is that we define, since we can define out of the generators of the Lorentz group, we can define Ji to be 1/2 epsilon ijk mjk. These are out of the m's. Now ijk are going from 1 2 and 3. So these are the generators of rotations. So Ji, spatial rotations. Okay? And then we define the Ki to be M0i, and this degenerate Lorentz boost. Okay, so out of the generators of the Lorentz group, you can define the ones with the only special code indices that will give rise to the standard Ji, which is the generator of rotation. So this will generate the rotation group inside the Lorentz group. And this, since it has a time component here, generates the boosts. And out of these two, you can define A and B, and Ai equals 1/2 Ji plus Iki, and Bi to be 1/2 Ji minus Iki. And the nice thing about A and B is that they satisfy the algebras Ai Aj equals okay, so knowing the algebra of the Lorentz group, we know the algebra of the m's, then so we know the algebras of the j's and k's, and because of A and B are defined in terms of the j's and k's, they satisfy this algebra, and these two algebras we recognize as the algebras of SU2. So this is an SU2, this is another SU2. And they commute. So that means that we have a structure of SU2 cross SU2. So this cannot be fully true. It's only true locally in the sense that it's the algebra that is satisfied. But you have to pay attention a small detail. Small detail is that A and B satisfy the same algebra of the of the angular momentum. Well, just AIAJ equals to that. This is the algebra of angular momentum. So this is, these are like rotations, and these are like rotations. However, A and B, given these definitions, are not necessarily Hermitian generators. Okay, so this is the algebra of SU2 cross SU2, but A and B are not necessarily Hermitian, are not Hermitian in general. And what is Hermitian is the combination A plus B, and A plus B is J. So J is the real spin. When we talk about spin, it will be J. Okay. So but given this fact that the representations are labeled by spins, and spins A and B as a two spins, but physical angular momentum, the physical spin is J, which is A plus B. Okay. Notice also that on the parity, on the parity, that means that we change the sign of the special components and don't touch the sign, the time. You know what parity is? Who doesn't know what parity is? Okay. Parity means that x0 goes to x0 and xi goes to minus xi. Okay, so we change the sign of the special coordinates on a space-time vector. Under parity, we have that what happens under parity, J I goes to J I, K I goes to minus K I. Okay. J, remember the definition of J is in terms of the n's that has two indices, so you change sign of the two special indices, you get back the same thing. So J is invariant, but K changes sign. Okay, so that means that A is exchanged with B, and because A is J plus K and B is J minus K. Something good to have in mind now because of what I'm going to say. This will have to do with what we call left-handed and right-handed later on. So parity exchanges A and B. That is one property of SO31. Let me talk about another property, which is probably the most important one. SO31 is homomorphic to SL2C. SL2C is the matrix of 2 by 2 complex matrix with unit determinant. And this symbol here means homomorphic. Okay. It is not isomorphic because the map is not 1 to 1, but it will be a 2 to 1 map, as we will see in a second. Okay, so the argument for this is that we can have, so this is since a vector x can be represented as x mu e mu is a Ford vector, but also X, I will call this tilde as a matrix, K can be written as x mu sigma mu, where sigma mu's are a basis of 2 by 2 matrices. And this will be equal to x0 plus x3, x1 minus ix2, x1 plus ix2, x0 minus x3. And as I told you, sigma mu equals to the identity and the three Pauli matrices, which are 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, minus I, 0, 0, 0, minus I. Okay. So we have E mu is the basis, the 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, and so on. This is the standard basis on R4. So this is a vector. A 4 vector has 4 components. But these same 4 components can be written in terms of an arbitrary matrix in 2 dimensions, 2 by 2 matrix, as a linear combination of the identity matrix and the 3 Pauli matrices. So out of that, this matrix carries the same information as this vector, because they all are determined by x0, x1, x2, and x3. The interesting thing is that the Lorentz group, SO31, what it does, it leaves invariant the length of the vector, because it leaves invariant the metric, eta. So that means on the SO31, let's see, I'm going to write. It's invariant. But on the transformation of SL to Z to C, we have that the matrix X tilde goes to X tilde prime equals to N X tilde N dagger, where N is a 2 by 2 matrix, then the determinant of X tilde equals to the determinant of X tilde prime, and the determinant of X tilde, you can see, is precisely X0 squared minus X2 squared minus X2. Okay? So what we're seeing is that there's a map between a four-dimensional space-time and a space of 2 by 2 matrices. And the transformations on the two, on the four dimensions, the Lorentz group, are mapped into transformations of the 2 by 2 matrices by elements of SL to C. This is the linear group in 2 dimensions with complex entries and unit determinant. And such that is unit, the having n being unit determinant, the determinant of x tilde is equals to the determinant of x tilde prime equals to the determinant of x tilde, and the determinant is precisely the invariant in both ways. This is invariant and that is invariant. Okay. So, but the map is not a 1-to-1 map between the SL to C and SO31, but it's a 2-to-1 map. It's 2-to-1, since if we choose n to be plus or minus the identity in in SL to C, this will correspond to lambda equals just the identity. Okay, so two n's plus or minus the identity in two dimensions correspond to one lambda, and the reason is because we have two n's here. So n, you change the sign, nothing happens. Okay, so the important thing about this is that SL to C, the you want to study representations of the of the Lorentz group. You can study representations of the SL to C group, and SL to C happens to be what is called the universal covering group of SO31. That means that is homomorphic. The same the algebras are the same, but SL to C is a simply connected group. As a manifold, it's a simply connected manifold, whereas SO31 is doubly connected. And the reason is because there is a 2-to-1 map here. So so the one that represents is closer to what the algebra is SL to C, because this is the one that you can always exponentiate. You start from the algebra, you exponentiate to get the group. It's the simply connected part. The simply connected group is the one that is more related to the algebra. So the one that defines the basic representations of the Lorentz group will be the universal covering group SL to C. Okay. It's relatively easy to see the SL to C is simply connected. It's the same relationship that there is between SU2 and SO3. SU2 is simply connected, and SO3 is not. And the map is a 2-to-1 map. And SU2, you can see that as a manifold, is a 3-sphere. And SL to C will be essentially the 3-sphere times the R3. So it will be also simply connected, and then SO31 is not simply connected. Let me know if you are completely lost or if it's completely trivial. Mm. Nothing? It's okay? Okay. Okay. Please, I insist, there's nothing like a stupid question. So any question is valid. But also, if it is completely trivial, let me know and then I can just skip and let you know. Yes?
Covering, the same kind of like covering space,
you have
like algebraic
topology,
you have like lift here.
Between what? I think so.
Well, you have just like a covering space, a particular space, and you can kind of like lift functions from one space to the other, and I'm not really sure myself what that is.
Probably the same. The problem with this is that I don't know algebraic topology, it could be the same thing. But it's
a fundamental homomorphic theory.
Yes. Exactly, because here is the topology will be different. So of the two manifolds, and as one will be simply connected, and the other one will not be. So yes. So in that sense, it will be the same thing. Yeah. So okay. Good. So the important thing about this is that then when we talk about the algebra, we have to look for representations of SL to C, because this is the group that is simply connected. Okay, that's the only. So, precisely now representations of SL to C and that's precisely the definition of a spinner. That's where we will see why spinners are special objects. One is called the fundamental. The fundamental. is such that psi prime alpha equals to n alpha beta, where n is a 2x2 matrix of SL2C, times psi beta, where alpha and beta are 1 and 2. Then there is the conjugate representation, where again alpha and beta dot are 1 and 2. And for those of you who didn't go to the symmetry and group the course, these are completely two different indices, alpha and alpha dot, and I will be using this very much during this course, so that's why I'm making a discussion about this here. Alpha dot is a different index than alpha because this object transforms differently than this object. So keeping the alphas and alpha dots in my notation, that keeps a way of seeing how things are transforming. Okay? And these two representations are independent. However, there are other two what are called contravariant representations that essentially are with the indices up. And this is psi beta times an inverse beta alpha and chi bar alpha dot to be chi bar beta dot and star inverse beta dot alpha dot. Okay, so these two representations are independent. These two representations will be dependent on this one, and we will see why in a second. Okay, so the invariant tensors we have that we know that eta mu nu equals the inverse of eta mu nu is invariant under SO3-1. And that's why we use eta to raise and lower the indices. Here for SL2C, for SL2C, the invariant tensor is epsilon. It's invariant because epsilon prime alpha beta equals epsilon rho sigma times n alpha beta rho sigma. And since this is totally asymmetric, so this is equal to, it's proportional to the, it's totally asymmetric, so it has to be proportional to epsilon alpha beta, And then the coefficient of proportionality, you can see that it's just the determinant of n. But since n has determinant 1 because it's SL2C, this is epsilon alpha beta. And that means that it is invariant. So we can use epsilon to raise and lower the indices. I put a minus sign here to the indices down such that when I multiply both, I get the identity. Okay, so that's important because now we can raise and lower indices with epsilon. Okay, so in particular, psi alpha equals epsilon alpha beta psi beta and chi bar alpha dot equals epsilon alpha dot beta dot chi bar beta dot. So where epsilon with the dots, I'm defining it to be the same as epsilon without the dot. So it's the same definition. So it has 1, 0, 0, minus 1. Okay, so this tells you that these contravariant representations that we were talking about are related to the original ones by lowering and raising the indices by epsilon. Okay, that's the point. That tells you that out of these four representations, only these two are independent. The other two are just obtained from the other ones by lowering and raising the indices with epsilon. Okay. They're not independent. And then the other object that we're talking about their invariant tensor. The other object that can be considered here is something that has mixed SL2C and SO31 indices. And that is sigma mu alpha dot. Again, I can use the same alpha, but this alpha has nothing to do with this alpha because it has a dot. Okay. Please do not get confused for those of you who are not familiar with this notation. This is completely different indices as this one. I could have called it beta or gamma, but always with a dot to tell you how this object transforms. And again, sigma mu is what I told you. It was the set of the identity plus the three Pauli matrices. And here, this object, a way to see that it is invariant is that by the map between SL2C and SO31, we know that that X mu sigma mu gets transformed to n alpha beta x nu sigma nu component beta gamma dot n star alpha dot gamma dot. Okay. And but the X transforms like a lambda mu nu x nu sigma mu. So from here, sigma mu has indices alpha, alpha dot, and transforms as n alpha beta sigma mu beta gamma dot lambda mu nu inverse n star alpha dot gamma dot. So that means that you see this as a transformation of sigma. Sigma carries three indices. Two are two-dimensional, and one is four dimensions. So this is how the two-dimensional indices transforms. With respect to beta, transform like n times sigma. With respect to gamma dot, transform like sigma times n star. But with respect to the nu's, transform like a lambda mu nu inverse, which is a Lorentz transformation itself. And all that gives you back sigma. So that means that sigma is invariant in that regard. So. Okay, and similarly, for what is called sigma bar, and this is one of the very confusing things. Please, this lecture is a bit of a technicality, but we need that to build up the rest. Sigma bar mu. Components alpha dot alpha is defined to be epsilon alpha beta epsilon alpha dot beta dot sigma mu beta beta dot, and this u is identity minus sigma. Okay, so sigma 0 will be the identity, but sigma I will be minus sigma. You use the definitions of the epsilons. And notice that sigma bar is not the complex conjugate of sigma, or no dagger or anything. It just, this is the definition, sigma bar equals to that. Okay. The only difference is that is the way that the indices are carried, alpha dot alpha, in order to have the right contractions on the indices. But sigma bar has a similar properties as the sigma, so that we can use both in what will follow. And actually, what will follow is that from sigmas and sigma bars, we can build the generators. Of SL2C, which is the generators of SL2C are sigma mu nu alpha beta, which is defined as I over 4 sigma mu sigma bar nu minus sigma nu sigma bar mu alpha beta. And sigma bar mu nu alpha dot beta dot is defined as I over 4 times sigma bar mu sigma nu sigma bar mu sigma nu, and that is components alpha dot beta dot. Okay. The special thing about this these objects is that knowing the properties of the Pauli matrices, we can build this product carrying this. This carries only undotted indices, and this carries only dotted indices. Okay. And the important thing about this is that both sigma and sigma bar, they satisfy the algebra of the Lorentz group. So that's, for instance, your question at the beginning. This is another representation of the algebra of the Lorentz group by 2x2 matrices. And this will be the generators of SL2C. Sorry?
Can you give us a handwritten argument why the sigma bar has its first index when we got this normal sigma second index?
This one here and this one there.
A little bit above where you define the
sigma bar. Yes. It's just conventional to carry the things in a nice way. When you contract, the thing goes the same way. So you have here sigma mu alpha alpha dot. You get it because of the way it transforms. It transforms, the first index transforms with an n, and the second index transforms with the n star. Okay? So, and then the sigma bar with the first index will transform like an n star, and the second index will transform as an n, with an n. So it's because of the way they transform. And then that, when you contract things, that, then you will get the invariance is when you contract in the right direction. Okay, but the idea, that's a good question, because that's precisely one of the points about keeping the notation clear. Why do we put dots and not dots? So we know when we write the object, we know exactly how it is transforming. So with the first index, transform with the n star, and with the second index, transform with the n. Okay, and that's what makes it invariant at the end. Okay. Okay. So coming back to what I was saying, sigma, both of these sigmas, they sigma mu nu and sigma bar mu nu satisfy the Lorentz algebra. Okay. So I don't have to write it because you know it's the algebra of the m's that I wrote before. Sigma mu nu, sigma alpha beta equals I. Sigma eta, sigma eta, all the terms that I wrote, the same algebra I wrote for the m's. Okay, before we finish, we have 2 more minutes. I guess you can see you're hungry. So that means that as a spinner, sigma psi alpha goes like e to the minus I 1 over 2 r omega mu nu sigma mu nu alpha beta psi beta, and chi bar alpha dot will go like the same thing alpha dot beta dot times chi bar beta dot. Okay? So this is what we call a left-handed spinner, and this is what we call a right-handed spinner. And so the fundamental and the conjugate, that will give us the 2 kinds of spinners. And you can check that in terms of A and B, this is a 1/2 0 representation. And for this one, in terms of A and B, this is a 0/1/2 representation. And under parity, as I told you, parity change A and B. This implies that parity changes the 1/2 0 to 0, 1 half, and that justifies the name of left-handed and right-handed. Okay. And in this, for the 1 half 0 representation, the ji, you can just, now you know what, how to construct the ji's out of this, of the sigmas, happens to be 1 half sigma I, which is the Pauli matrices, and that's what you can see. That is 1 half 0. And for and ki equals to minus 1 half sigma matrix, whereas for the 0, 1 half, ji equals 2, 1 half sigma, and ki equals over 2 sigma I. Okay. So you can see the generators of spin in the are just the Pauli matrices for both, but k changes sign, and that will give us the 1 half 0 and 0, 1 half for the A's and B's. So unfortunately, I ran out of time, so we'll stop here today. And we are very far already in the technicalities. There's a couple of more pages in my notes, and then we'll start with something about supersymmetry. Okay? Please ask any questions you have about this formalism, because we will be using it. So that's it's good to have it clear.